something important.
Yes, Master. But Master...
Fret, you must not, said Yoda. Dexter Jetster's message we have heard.
Message? There was a message? His memory was fragmented, splinters scattered here and there, a single word. Othoe. Fear, urgency, Dex's tense, unhappy face.
Grievous, Grievous. Grievous is coming.
Horrified, he tried to sit up, cried out instead as his mended, broken body protested. The healing chamber disappeared in waves of bright and blinding pain.
Be still, Obi-Wan, Yoda commanded. A relapse, do you desire?
There was no time to be still. Bothawi's time was running out.
Master, we must defend the Bothans,
he said, his teeth gritted as he struggled to banish weakness.
Assign me a battle group. Let me take it to the Bothan system. Let me...
No,
said Yoda, leaning close, one small hard hand pushing him flat to the mattress. His face was stern, his gaze piercing. 900 years of authority blazed in his eyes.
Finished healing, you have not. Young Skywalker, a battle group will lead to Bothawi.
Anakin? In charge of a battle group?
No. No, it was too soon. It was too much to ask of him. Too great a burden to place on such young shoulders. The danger was too great.
They can't choose Anakin, he thought.
Obi-Wan,
said Yoda, and poked his healed shoulder with a finger.
Remember our talk of attachment, hmm? Let go of your fears for Anakin, you must. Look at him as a Jedi Knight, you must. Not your Padawan. Not the boy you knew and trained and protected. A man he is now. Look at the man.
The man who had overcome his crippling injury, put aside love for the sake of duty, triumphed on Christophsis and Tatooine. The man who was born to bring balance to the Force. The man whose potential was unmatched in Temple history. The man whose sheer brilliance was growing daily.
Mistaken, am I, Obi-Wan?
Yoda asked softly.
The wrong man is Anakin Skywalker to battle General Grievous?
Wrong? No. No, not wrong, but... You always knew this day would come, Obi-Wan thought. All this means is that it's come a little sooner.
No, Master Yoda, he said. You're not mistaken. He's grown since Geonosis, since his mistake in rushing to face Dooku. He's more settled, more self-controlled. His focus is where it belongs now. He's learned to let go of his attachments. If anyone can take down that monster Grievous, it's Anakin.
Yoda's eyes closed. His head dipped. He sighed.
Then lead a battle group to Bothawi, young Skywalker will.
He produced a data pad from a pocket in his hover chair and tossed it onto the bed.
The mission details these are. Tell him you can, when allowed to visit you, he is.
Yes, Master,
Obi-Wan whispered, his eyes closed against his will. And then he felt the gentle touch of a small, ancient hand lightly skimming over his head.
Rest, Obi-Wan,
said Yoda, as Obi-Wan slid towards sleep.
For need you at full strength, our suffering Republic does.
A battle group, said Palpatine, hands neatly folded on his desk. To the Bothan system? Why? Has something happened, Master Yoda, of which I haven't been made aware?
He watched closely as Yoda considered his reply, the garish night lights of Coruscant flickering over his wrinkled face. The stench of the light side in him was enough to make a man vomit.
How I long for the day when I can squash this disgusting little creature. The dark side willing, it will be soon now. Very soon.
Intelligence have we received, said Yoda. A whisper of trouble. Against Bothawi, a threat is made. By General Grievous.
Palpatine permitted himself to reveal horror. Inside, he felt a nasty sting.
How had the Jedi learned of this?
Someone, somewhere would have to be punished.
And you'd deploy a whole battle group on the strength of a whisper?
Yes, Chancellor. A chance to vanquish Grievous, this is.
Well, that was hardly what he wanted to hear. Grievous was proving more useful with each passing day, slaughtering Jedi and clones with gleeful abandon, obliterating whole townships, sowing misery and discord wherever he went.
If Dooku hadn't found him, I'd have been forced to invent him.
I see, he said gravely.
Then it's no wonder you wanted a private meeting, Master Yoda. With terrorists in the administration precincts, we must not risk this news leaking. I congratulate the Jedi on their efficient intelligence network, but do we have ships to spare for this mission? I rather thought we were pressed.
We do, said Yoda. From Alantine 6, they will arrive tomorrow.
Then he would have to arrange some kind of unfortunate accident. A tiny spot of sabotage that would destroy the cruisers on their way to Bothawe, and subsequently be traced back to the shipyards. The resulting recriminations and investigations, not to mention the loss of morale, would slow cruiser production significantly, thus hampering the Republic's efforts to bring the Separatists to their knees.
For the war must continue. The Republic's not nearly weak enough yet. And as for Grievous, he's not done serving me.
It amused him to think such things with Yoda standing mere feet away, standing there sublimely oblivious to the enemy under his nose. The Jedi were so arrogant, so self-important, so drunk on the sense of their own superiority, none more so than their beloved Yoda.
But your domination of the galaxy is in its dying days, my puny friend. In time, in so little time, I will snuff out the light.
Supreme Chancellor, said Yoda.
Forgive me, he said wearily. It's been a hectic day, another full session of the Senate, and it's not long ended.
He frowned.
I'm afraid there's been some agitation. Questions raised as to how much longer the fighting will continue.
Doing everything within our power we are, Chancellor, to end this destructive conflict,
said Yoda, pricked, as intended by the gentle complaint, the subtly implied criticism.
It's the slow drip of water that wears away the stone. Thus are the foundations of any edifice undermined. Sudden onslaughts inspire heroic defenses, but nobody notices a constant whispering trickle, not until the house falls down.
Oh, I know, Master Yoda, he said, exquisitely sympathetic. I completely understand, and I did explain to the senators just how hard the Jedi are trying to achieve victory.
He smiled.
We must hope that this time at Bothawe you succeed in defeating that dreadful Grievous and end his rampage of terror. Tell me, who have you chosen to lead the charge against him? Not Master Kenobi, by any chance?
Say yes, little toad. That would be such an elegant solution, and I could eliminate Organa at some other time.
No, lead the battle group Anakin Skywalker will.
Palpatine thought.
Anakin?
Staring, he felt an unpleasant, unaccustomed emotion. Surprise.
Well, what a singular honor!
And I did not see it coming.
How disconcerting, and how unwelcome the news. Anakin pitted against Grievous? What were the Jedi thinking? Yes, he'd acquitted himself well in his last mission, but even so, to give him command of a battle group was folly.
He's not ripe yet. He's not ready to be plucked. These Jedi fools will waste him. They will waste him, and he's mine.
Master Yoda, he steepled his fingers, are you quite certain young Anakin is ready for such a task?
Yes, said Yoda flatly.
And that was a lie. Yoda was a master at masking his emotions, but not even he could hide them from the greatest Sith Lord ever known. He was worried, and backed into a corner.
I see, Palpatine said. Well, I only hope for all our sakes you're not asking too much of Anakin too soon.
From the look on his face,
Yoda didn't relish his decision being questioned. Nobody crossed him these days. That was his trouble. The Jedi bowed and scraped before him, choking on their flattery.
Not that I'm complaining. It makes him so much easier to deceive.
Ready for the challenge, young Skywalker is, pronounced Yoda. Have faith in him, the Jedi Council does.
As do I, Master Yoda. Thank you for keeping me apprised of this crucial development. Naturally, given the extremely sensitive nature of the mission, I shall keep its details to myself. And I would count it as a personal favor if you made sure to tell me how Anakin is faring.
Apprised we will keep you, Supreme Chancellor, said Yoda, taking his leave at last.
Once he was alone, Palpatine activated his holo intercom.
See that I'm not disturbed again for any reason, he told Mos Amida. I shall tell you when I am available again.
Of course, Supreme Chancellor,
Mos Amida said, bowing. Then his image winked out. Palpatine swiveled his chair until he faced his office's transparasteel wall. Normal traffic flow had not yet been restored to the administration sector. That strange gap in the sky continued, exaggerated, now that night was fallen, further unsettling the people of Coruscant. He could feel their dismay seething, their fears building, their confidence eroding, a bouquet like fine wine upon his palate. Then the bouquet soured slightly. Destroying the battle group was obviously out of the question now. Ah, well, never mind. As Yoda was so tediously fond of saying,
always in motion, the future is.
He'd have to adjust his plans, that was all. It wouldn't be the first time, nor would it be the last. In the larger scheme of things, it made no difference. Now or later, Kenobi would die, and the Republic would fall. He had foreseen it. On the other hand,
perhaps I should merely cripple the cruisers, scuttle the Bothawi mission entirely, for if there's even the slightest chance of losing Anakin to Grievous, or Grievous to him.
Guaranteed his privacy, he plunged his consciousness into the dark side. Searched the shifting matrix of the future, sifted possible from probable, likely outcomes from unlikely, seeking, seeking, always seeking. When at length he emerged from his trance, he was smiling. Anakin would not destroy Grievous at Bothawi, neither would he perish by the creature's hand. No, thanks to this new assignment, his secret apprentice would merely grow in stature, in speed, and in breathtaking skill. Never once suspecting whom and what he truly served. As for Grievous, he, it, would continue on its bloodthirsty way, cutting a swath through the ranks of the Jedi. The war would continue, slowly but surely, unraveling the Republic, laying it to waste for his delectation. Equally important, the dark side had shown him how to rid himself of Kenobi and that stalwart fool Organa. A nudge here, a string pulled there, pathetic friendship so easily exploited. Trust and loyalty the currency of weaklings. And best of all, the instrument of their destruction already existed. He hardly needed to lift a finger. An ancient planet, hidden and safeguarded by the Sith for centuries. A sarlacc of space, hungry for prey. Retrieving his Sith robe and holotransmitter, he transformed into Darth Sidious and contacted Dooku.
Darth Tyrannus, the opportunity to eliminate two important enemies has arisen.
Dooku bowed.
That is good news, Master. How can I serve?
The infiltration of Bail Organa's private intelligence network. It holds...
Yes, Master, of course.
Then contact your agent. I have information for our dupe of Alderaan. Information that will lead him and Obi-Wan Kenobi to their doom.
Dooku's hologram chuckled.
What a tragedy, Master.
The fool was overconfident. He imagined himself an equal.
The tragedy will be yours, Tyrannus, if you should fail.
Sidious snapped with a sting of the dark side, and smiled to see how Dooku cringed.
Now, my apprentice, pay very close attention.
Anakin,
said a soft female voice. A gentle hand touched his shoulder.
Anakin, wake up.
He opened his eyes, leapt from slumber to wakefulness within a heartbeat. Not his mother. Vokara Che. Yes, Master. The temple's leading healer was smiling.
Master Kenobi is awake, Anakin. It's very late, but you may visit with him briefly.
Beside him, Ahsoka stirred, then uncurled in her chair. Like him, she had the knack of instant alertness. It was a Jedi thing, but also owed something to their particular backgrounds. His as a slave, hers as a Togruta. Whatever the reason, it came in handy. He glanced at her, a warning to keep quiet. No comments about how long they'd been waiting. Then he nodded at Vokara Che. Yes, Master, thank you. Before I see him, is there anything I should know? Anything I should prepare for?
A perceptive question, Anakin,
said Vokara Che, warm with approval.
He is mended well enough, but as you know, the body has its own wisdom. Recovery cannot be rushed.
As if he needed the reminder. Even now, after time and so much healing, he sometimes felt pain in the arm Dooku had taken. And there was pain of a different kind, too. Touch, the simple sensation of flesh to flesh, was so important. Yes, delicate sensors in the prosthetic limb fed pseudo-sensations to his brain, but it wasn't the same. He wasn't the same. And a part of him would always know that, and grieve for what he'd lost. Even though they all told him, those superior Jedi on the Council, that he was wrong for feeling cheated and deprived. Oh, how he resented their smug assurance. The Supreme Chancellor was right. Sometimes the Jedi were so stupid. Not that Palpatine had ever come right out and said as much, but he'd come close once or twice, exclaiming over some slight or criticism he shared with him out of lonely desperation. When you lose the ability to touch the woman you love with both hands, Masters, then you can advise me on how I should feel, Anakin thought. But since that'll never happen, I wish you'd keep your ignorant opinions to yourselves.
Anakin,
said Vokara Che. Her headtails were twitching. Dedicated healers were the most sensitive Jedi of all. She could feel his disquiet, the fear and resentment that too often simmered so close to his surface.
You must not concern yourself. Obi-Wan will recover fully in time. Come with me now, so he can tell you for himself.
With a deep breathing effort, he banished every emotion but relief. Yes, Master. Turning, he nodded at his Padawan. Wait here for me, Ahsoka. I won't be long. Ahsoka nodded, sitting bolt upright and alert.
Yes, Master Skywalker,
she said. She sounded positively chirpy. She thinks I don't realize when she's twisting my tail, he thought. Ah, well, she'll learn soon enough. I wonder if 200 repetitions of Nyman Form Level 1 will give her the hint. Ahsoka's bright expression dimmed just a little bit.
Master, what's so funny?
Nothing, he said. Mind your manners. I'll be back soon. He followed Vokara Che out of the peaceful waiting chamber, with its soft blue lighting, its calm pink walls and deep blue carpets, to the place where they were keeping Obi-Wan. It wasn't the same room he'd been made to call home. Standing before its closed door, Vokara Che raised a warning finger.
No excitement, Anakin. Don't let him become agitated. Satisfy yourself that he is indeed recovered and come away. Since you're the one who found him, you must know he has had a lucky escape.
Oh yes, he knew. I will, Master Vokara Che, he promised. Thank you. With a searching look and a sharp nod, she departed. He tugged his tunic straight, pressed the door release, and entered the room. It was discreetly lit, so as not to distress its occupant. There was a window looking out to the city, but its blind was drawn. No bustling nightlife for the convalescent. Obi-Wan was in bed, propped up by a mountain of pillows. His hair and beard were neatly ordered and blood-free. That made a nice change. The wicked gash on his cheek had vanished, leaving behind it a thin pink line. The rest of his face was untroubled, but too pale. From the chest down, his body was smothered in blankets, but to all outward appearances, he was most definitely whole again. There was a data pad on the nightstand beside him. If he was reading, he really must be better. Obi-Wan smiled. Anakin. Master, he replied, then walked softly to the chair beside the bed and sat down. You know, we really have to stop meeting like this. I couldn't agree more, said Obi-Wan with a breath of laughter. So, what was the damage? Various bumps and bruises, Obi-Wan replied evasively. A bit of scorching, a cut here and there. Anakin sat back, arms folded, one eyebrow skeptically raised. And really, there is no need to make a fuss, said Obi-Wan, shifting uncomfortably. I hardly think I look at death's door. Do you? Not now you don't, Anakin agreed. But then everyone knows Master Vokara Che is a genius. So, what else? It was almost comical to see the vaunted Master Kenobi wriggling like a Tisca worm on a hook. Concussion, he mumbled. Broken hand, broken leg, broken shoulder, cracked pelvis, 4 broken ribs and a punctured lung. 1 or 2 internal organs jostled a bit. Is that all? Anakin snorted. And to think I thought it was actually serious. That should teach me to overreact. Obi-Wan gave him a fulminating look. Sorry, Anakin said, grinning. That doesn't work on me anymore. Did it ever? Obi-Wan retorted. Then he sighed. I'm fine, Anakin, truly, thanks to you. Suddenly it wasn't something he could joke about anymore. You're welcome, Obi-Wan. Please, just don't do anything like that again. You mean ride a city bike at speed headfirst into an exploding terrorist bomb? Said Obi-Wan. Well, I'll certainly do my best. Repeating oneself becomes tedious, after all. That's one word for it. Silence as they shared a wry grin. I made sure Master Yoda got your message, Anakin said at last. I don't know if they believed it, but... Oh yes, said Obi-Wan, sobering. They believed it, Anakin. They're sending a battle group to intercept Grievous at Bothawe. Admiral Yularen has been appointed the ranking Republic military official, transferring from the Spirit of the Republic. Your flagship will be the Resolute. It's one of 3 newly commissioned cruisers. What? His what? I'm sorry, did you say my flagship? There was no trace of amusement in Obi-Wan now. His expression was watchful. His eyes were guarded. Yes. Anakin stared at him. If I didn't know better, he thought, I'd say he was afraid. That can't be right. I've only just been made a Jedi Knight. I'm not ready to... Then get ready, said Obi-Wan. You're leaving as soon as those ships arrive. You and your Padawan, and as many clone pilots and troops as we can spare. Given its sensitivity, the mission's been classified at the highest level of security. The Supreme Chancellor's being privately briefed by Master Yoda. No one else in the government will be told. Not until it's over, one way or another. He frowned, his tension humming through the Force. I can't possibly overemphasize the importance of this mission, Anakin. For the first time since the war started, we have the element of surprise. We may never get it again. This could be our only chance to take down Grievous once and for all. Anakin's heart was pounding so hard he thought he might end up with broken ribs. Yularen, he's a good man. Who'll command the other 2 cruisers? The Council hasn't decided yet. Hopefully no one likely to get bent out of shape because wet behind the ears Anakin Skywalker was the Jedi in charge. And Rex? Do I get Captain Rex? If you want him. Oh, I want him all right, Anakin thought. Rex and the 501st are mine. Yes, please. Then you'll be happy to know he's on standby, said Obi-Wan. Captain Rex and his men will be ready to ship out when you are. So you knew I'd want him. A brief smile, a shrug.
Of course. Don't tell me you're surprised. I know you, remember?
Yes. Yes, Obi-Wan did. Not as well as he thought, but well enough. Still shocked by this unexpected news, Anakin sat back in his chair and stared at the black glove covering his prosthetic hand.
Why me? Master Yoda and the others don't really trust me, he thought. They never have. Since Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan's the only Jedi who stood up for me against the Council.
He looked up again. This command should be yours, Master. You've got the experience, you've got the concussion, broken hand, broken leg, and so on, said Obi-Wan, impatient.
Or I did have a few hours ago. I'm not fit, Anakin. I won't be fit for days. At least not fit enough to safely endure battle stress. And there's a good chance Bothawi doesn't have days. For all we know, Grievous is bearing down on the Both system as we speak.
We still don't have a fix on his location?
No, said Obi-Wan. And we don't dare ask the Bothans in case they've been compromised. That means we're flying blind on this one, Anakin.
Anakin grinned. He couldn't help it. Exultation was swiftly overtaking doubt.
A battle group of my very own, he thought. Yes!
That's fine by me. Flying blind is what I do best. Obi-Wan didn't return the grin. Instead, he sat forward, his eyes anxious.
This isn't a joking matter, Anakin. The fate of the Republic could rest on this mission. We can't lose Bothawi to Grievous and Dooku. Countless lives in the Bothan system are depending on you.
Was the battle at the Teth Monastery amusing? All the clone troops who died there, all of Rex's men, was losing them funny?
Stung, Anakin pushed to his feet.
No, of course it wasn't.
Then take this seriously.
I am taking it seriously, he retorted, indignant. I know exactly how important this mission is, Master.
The room's soft lighting showed a fresh sheen of sweat on Obi-Wan's pale face.
Do you, Anakin? Do you really?
I hope so. For all our sakes, I hope.
Frustrated, Anakin swung about, feeling the servos in his prosthetic hand pulse as its fingers clenched.
You don't think I can do this, do you? Despite Christophsis, you still see me as a kid, your apprentice, snot-nosed Anakin who can't be trusted to get the job done.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, snapped Obi-Wan, breathing heavily.
That's your own fear talking, Anakin. You'd best defeat it before it defeats you.
I'm not afraid, Anakin snapped back. I know I can do this. I know I'm ready. I've changed. I'm not that greenie anymore, the Padawan who let himself get caught out twice on Geonosis.
He held up his gloved hand, clenched to a fist.
Trust me, Obi-Wan. I learned my lesson.
You learned that lesson, yes, said Obi-Wan, blankets twisted in his fingers. But it doesn't mean you know everything yet, Anakin. You're still young. There are still many things you must...
The rest of his lecture was lost in a gasp. Appalled, Anakin saw his former master's face drain dead white, saw the sheen of sweat on him transform to a drenching, felt pain explode through Obi-Wan like a random, vicious Sith lightning.
Master!
He exclaimed and leapt for the bed. Obi-Wan curled onto his side, knees snapped to his chest, teeth sunk into his lower lip. Anakin took hold of his shoulders and held him against the cruel, racking shutters.
I'm sorry, he muttered as Obi-Wan shook. I shouldn't have shouted. I didn't mean what I said. You're right. I've still got a lot to learn from you, Obi-Wan. Nobody else has the patience to teach me. No other Jedi understands the way you do. Hang on. Hang on.
The chamber's door slid open, and Vokara Che entered like a whirlwind.
What is going on here? Anakin Skywalker, I told you not to agitate him. What did you say to him? What have you done?
Nothing, said Obi-Wan through chattering teeth. He's done nothing. It's not his fault. Anakin,
I'm here. I'm sorry. I...
Stand back, you wretch! Snapped Vokara Che, ruthlessly shoving him aside, as fierce as he had ever seen her. Fiercer than he would have thought possible for such a gentle being. Get out of my way!
Stunned to silent obedience, Anakin retreated, watching as Vokara Che pressed a dull green healing crystal to Obi-Wan's chest.
Then he felt a massive surge in the force, heat and light, and Vokara Che's will combined. The crystal pulsed, bright as an emerald sun. Slowly, resentfully, Obi-Wan's pain surrendered.
There, said Vokara Che, gentle again, her face and voice soothing,
as familiar now as she'd been a stranger moments before.
There, you foolish Jedi. Be at peace, Master Kenobi. Be still. Sleep.
Obi-Wan sighed, the sound almost a groan.
Anakin.
He's gone, she said firmly, darting a glare in Anakin's direction.
You can rest.
Frowning, Obi-Wan rolled his head on the pillows.
No. No.
Ignoring Vokara Che's reawakened anger, Anakin slipped around to the other side of the bed and took Obi-Wan's hand in a firm clasp.
I'm not gone, Master. I'm here.
Obi-Wan dragged open his eyes. They were dull, improperly focused.
You're to meet with the Council. First thing in the morning.
His voice was a grating whisper.
Final instructions. Be polite. Don't gloat.
Anakin nodded.
Yes, Master.
Obi-Wan was fighting to remain conscious.
You can defeat Grievous, Anakin. I know it. Never doubt my faith in you.
Frightened, he stared into Obi-Wan's bloodless face.
Echoes of his mother, her final pain-racked words.
I won't. I don't, Master. He nearly leapt out of his skin when Vokara Che touched his shoulder across the narrow bed.
He's not dying, Anakin,
the healer said with rough sympathy.
He's exhausted. You've exhausted him. Now leave.
There was nothing he could say to that. No protest he could make that wouldn't be wrong or selfish. He let go of Obi-Wan and turned for the door, where Ahsoka was standing, her thin, childish face shocked.
Time to go, he told her. Come on.
Chapter 9. He left the healing halls without once looking back, Ahsoka trotting silent and uncertain by his side.
Master Skywalker! Sky Guy!
She ventured at last in a whisper, as they took a swift tube to the temple's archives.
What's going on?
He glanced down at her. We've got a mission.
I kind of worked that out already. We're going after Grievous, right?
He nodded. Right. She swallowed.
Alone? I mean, just you and me?
You, me, Captain Rex, a bunch of clone pilots and troopers and three Jedi cruisers. Another glance down. Ours is called the Resolute.
A battle group?
Gasped Ahsoka.
We've got a battle group of our very own?
He wrapped his knuckles on top of her head. I've got a battle group. You get to tag along if you behave yourself. As the swift tube thundered its way up Tranquility Spire, Ahsoka jittered on her feet, a kind of nervous little dance.
Is Master Obi-Wan coming with us?
Obi-Wan, his dreadful pain.
Never doubt my faith in you.
No.
He looked bad. Will he be all right?
Of course, Anakin said with quick confidence. No separatist terrorist can kill Obi-Wan.
Do you believe that, Sky Guy?
She said, her voice small.
Or are you just saying it because you're scared and you want to feel better?
Jaw dropped. He stared at her.
Where does she come up with this stuff?
I believe it, Padawan, he said repressively. I never say anything I don't believe. The swift tube slid to a smooth stop and its doors opened. The Jedi Archives occupied almost a third of Tranquility Spire. He directed their swift tube to the main entrance and reference carrels where the data crystal catalogs were kept. Their arrival was noted by various Jedi who were diligently working on projects of their own, but nobody interrupted their tasks to speak with them. Here, said Anakin, guiding Ahsoka to an empty desk. I'll get you started, and then I'm going to leave you for a while. Sliding into the seat, she pulled a face.
You're always going off somewhere, Sky Guy. When do I get to come?
You don't, he said curtly. Now pay attention. She heaved a resigned sigh and watched as he accessed the primary archive database, then engaged the privacy mode with his personal key. This way, only the council would see which archives had been accessed, and that was all right. They were in on the secret. Anakin thought, after what happened with the records on Kamino and today's terrorist attack, I'm not taking any chances.
Master!
Ahsoka squeaked as the primary directory guide to Bothawi came on screen. She straightened out of her morose slump.
Is that where Gr-
Not a word, he told her, and tightened warning fingers on her shoulder. Now I want everything on our destination that you can dredge up, ready for me to look at when I get back, okay? She was hyper-alert again, all her instincts firing. One of these millennia, she'd make a pretty good Jedi, probably, provided he could smooth the rough edges off her.
Yes, Master, she said. You can trust me.
He frowned down at her.
Was I ever this young, he thought. Was this how I used to look at Obi-Wan?
He doubted it. Slaves lost their innocence while they were still in the cradle. Good girl, he said, and patted her on the back. I won't be gone long. More's the pity, he thought, and said, If anyone asks what you're doing, tell them to see me. She nodded.
Yes, Master.
Satisfied she couldn't go too far wrong here in the archives, he took an airspeeder from the temple docking complex and flirted with disaster all the way to Padme's apartment.
Oh, Master Anakin, how wonderful to see you,
C-3PO said, tottering out onto the apartment's veranda.
Look, R2-D2, Master Anakin's here.
Behind him, at the apartment's open, sliding transparasteel doors, the stubby blue astromech droid tooted and spun his dome. Anakin stared at them. 3PO could be effusive, and usually was. He knew that, but... Okay, what's wrong? But before the droid could answer, Padme emerged from her bedroom. When she saw him on the platform, her strained face crumpled, and she held out her arms.
Anakin!
Cursing, he shoved past 3PO and nearly sent R2-D2 tumbling in his desperation to reach her.
What is it? What's happened?
She didn't answer. Just tightened her arms around him as though one of them were dying. Her breathing was ragged, her pulse erratic. He could feel her heart pounding against his breast. And now that she was in his arms, now that he was breathing in her subtle perfume, he could feel, too, the depths of her distress. I'm sorry, he murmured against her hair. He'd been so worried about Obi-Wan, angered by the council, overwhelmed by the news of Bothawi, the battle group. An emotional cacophony had deafened him to the voice inside that whispered of Padme whenever she was near. I'm sorry, my love. I should have known you were upset. She shook her head, then leaned back to look up at him.
No, I'm all right. How's Obi-Wan?
Recovering, he said. Padme, you're not all right. What's happened? Tell me. Whatever it is, I'll fix it.
Oh, Anakin...
She pressed her smooth palm against his cheek, then stood on tiptoe to kiss him.
I love you so much.
And I love you, but you're making me cross. What's happened? Taking his hand, she led him over to the sofa and pulled him down beside her.
Nothing's happened, not exactly. It's just... Palpatine took me and Bail Organa on a tour of the bomb sites.
She shuddered.
They were awful. And after that, Bail and I visited some of the injured in the med centers. That was even worse. Men, women, and children, humans and Twi'leks, Chilactans and Sullustans, and, oh, a dozen other species. All maimed and disfigured in so much pain. And for what? For nothing. For going about their lives harming no one, Anakin. Not a one of them could ever threaten a Separatist. But the Separatists hurt them anyway. It was Naboo all over again.
Her voice broke, and she hid her face against his shoulder.
I can't bear it, and I can't see the end of it. Sometimes I think this war will go on until every last one of us is drowned in blood.
No, it won't, he said, holding her. The Jedi won't let it. I won't let it. We'll stop the killing, Padme, I promise you. We'll stop it. His arms tightened.
What was Palpatine thinking? Those bomb sites weren't safe. There could have been more explosions. He never should have taken you to them.
You shouldn't have had to see any of it. You shouldn't have... She pulled away.
Don't.
What? Puzzled, he stared at her.
Don't what? What do you mean?
Don't diminish me, Anakin, she said, and smeared her cheeks dry with one unsteady hand.
Don't think that because I'm upset, because I turn to you for comfort, that it means I'm weak or incapable of carrying out my duties. I'm not. I don't think that. No?
Now her eyes were challenging.
Are you sure?
He had no hope of hiding anything from her.
Okay, so I want to protect you. What's wrong with that? You're my wife, Padme. I love you, and I'll do anything to keep you safe. Is that a crime?
She kissed him, a swift, sweet pressure of her lips on his.
No, of course not. But I'm not just your wife, Anakin. I'm a Republic senator. I don't have the right to hide from the truth, no matter how brutal and ugly it is.
He frowned. And what is the truth?
That our only hope of winning this war was not letting it start in the first place.
She punched him gently on the chest.
Anakin, I hated every second of that tour this morning, and I hated seeing what those bomb blasts did to their victims. But I'm not sorry I saw it. I don't wish I hadn't gone. I'm heartbroken by the suffering and the waste. There's a difference. Do you understand that?
Slowly, he nodded.
Yes, but do you understand what it does to me seeing you cry over it? Don't you know that your pain is my pain, that it kills me knowing you might have been in danger? Padme, if anything happened to you, I'd lose my mind.
She took his flesh and blood hand and held it.
Oh, Anakin, don't be silly. We're going to grow old together, my love.
Well, she pulled a comical face, almost.
Since I'm 5 years your senior, actually I'm going to grow old first, but the point is that we...
He pressed his black-gloved fingers to her mouth.
No,
he whispered.
The point is that without you, Padme, I'm nothing. Without you, Anakin Skywalker doesn't exist.
He watched her eyes widen and fill with tears. Watched those tears tremble on her lashes, then fall to wet her pale cheeks.
Don't say that, Anakin. Don't ever say that.
Why not? It's the truth. She bit her lip as she struggled for composure.
Are you staying tonight?
Leaning forward, she rested her forehead against his.
Stay tonight,
she whispered.
We'll exist in each other.
I can't, he said, hating himself. I can't even stay 5 more minutes. I have to get back to the temple. She drew away, her eyes abruptly bleak.
You're leaving?
Yes. Bothawi's under threat from Grievous. I'm going to stop him. The mission's top secret. You can't let on, you know. Despite his pain, he smiled. Padme, they've given me a battle group. My own cruiser, the Resolute.
I see.
She stood and wandered a few paces to stare across the glittering cityscape. The droids had discreetly withdrawn. They were alone.
And Obi-Wan?
He's staying here. He was hurt pretty bad.
Oh.
But I will need R2.
Yes, she said, of course.
He joined her, slid his arms around her from behind. She didn't melt against him as she usually did. Instead, she felt brittle.
My own command, Padme. A chance at last to show the Council what I can do.
She didn't answer. He tightened his embrace.
Aren't you pleased for me? Be pleased for me, my love. I want to,
she said, her voice low.
But I'm too frightened.
Don't be, he said, cajoling, and turned her to face him.
I'll be fine. I'll be... Anakin.
She was right. He was patronizing her, humoring her as though she were a child. I'm sorry.
Oh, my darling,
she whispered.
Don't be sorry. Be careful. Come back.
He framed her face with his hands. Always. I will never abandon you, Padme. They kissed then, desperately, and held each other hard until he had to go. The Resolute was a beautiful ship. Standing with Master Yoda, Admiral Yularen, and battle-scarred Captain Rex, Ahsoka watched Anakin inspect the vessel's pristine bridge. No blaster burns, no scorch marks from shorted wiring, no war wounds at all. But of course, that would soon change. Soon, they'd be crossing paths with General Grievous and his merciless army of battle droids. She felt a tiny prickle of fright.
No, no, no. Don't think about that. We haven't even left orbit yet. There's plenty of time to think about that.
She was excited, sort of, to be going into combat again. War was bad, of course. No sane sentient wanted it. But if there had to be fighting, at least she was fighting on the right side. fighting against the forces of darkness, fighting to protect everything the Jedi held dear, most especially the Republic.
If we're not prepared to fight for it, then we deserve to lose it.
So yes, their cause was just, but that didn't mean she couldn't die defending it. It didn't mean Anakin couldn't die. Lots of Jedi had died already. Again, she felt that prickle of fright, sent a desperate plea out to the Force.
Don't let him be one of them. Don't let me be the Padawan who gets the Chosen One killed.
Her master's unguarded expression was tender as his gloved fingers trailed along every shiny, flat surface of his flagship's bridge. The long-range scanning station, comms, helm, tactical, atmospherics. A tall, athletic figure in unrelieved black, the faintest of smiles curving his lips. Oblivious to his audience, to the urgency of their mission, he communed in leisurely silence with the newly commissioned cruiser, as though they shared a telepathic conversation, as though the ship were whispering secrets in his ear. Baffled, she marveled at him.
I'll never understand Sky Guy. He loves machines like they're living, breathing creatures. I just don't get it. A ship is a tool, that's all it is. How can anyone love a tool? It's like saying you feel affection for a hydrospanner.
Beside her, Master Yoda tapped his gimmer stick to the deck. She didn't think he was annoyed with her master, but it was hard to tell. Yoda was the biggest mystery she'd ever met. All she knew for certain was that, though he was the most accomplished living Jedi, he wasn't so grand he couldn't feel tense, too.
Anakin, he said.
Her master turned, still smiling. Master Yoda?
Satisfied, are you, that in order everything is?
Everything's perfect, Master, said Anakin, his smile widening to an unrestrained grin. My compliments to the shipwrights. They've done a wonderful job.
Then if satisfied you are, leave you I must, said Yoda. And for the Bothan system, you should depart.
Sobering quickly, Anakin clasped his hands behind his back and nodded. Yes, Master.
In constant communication with us you will remain, Anakin, said Yoda. Your best judgment you must use, but take unnecessary risks you will not. Wily, Grievous is. Seek to distract you he will, Prepared you must be for his deceptions and feints. More than one battle you might have to fight.
Another respectful nod. Yes, Master. Yoda looked up at Admiral Yularen.
The importance of this mission you know, Admiral. Nothing else there is that I or the Council can tell you. May the Force be with you.
Yularen bowed, a soft-spoken and self-contained veteran who wasn't afraid to bite when he had to. He was the perfect counterweight to Anakin's fierce eagerness.
And with you, Master Yoda.
Master, Yoda looked back at Anakin.
A final question you have?
A request, said Anakin. When you next see Obi-Wan, please tell him I said thank you and I won't let him down. Ahsoka felt some of Yoda's tension ease.
Know that he does, Master Skywalker,
he said almost gently.
Know it as well, does the Jedi Council.
She hadn't been Sky Guy's apprentice for long, but it had taken very little time to figure out he and the Council bumped heads a lot. In fact, Padawan rumor had it, he had stood up to them the very first time they met. 9 years old, and he was challenging the Jedi Council. Unbelievable. Did it matter to him now to hear their endorsement of him? Did he care what they thought? Or was it only Obi-Wan's opinion that counted?
I don't know. I can't work it out. Sometimes he's as big a mystery as Yoda.
Thank you, Master, said Anakin, giving nothing away. May the Force be with you. Yoda nodded.
And with you. Farewell, and good hunting.
The ancient Jedi Master departed then, and the Resolute's crew leapt to obey Admiral Yularen's clipped, succinct orders, preparing to break orbit. Anakin turned to Rex. Your troops are settled, Captain, and ready for the fray? Calm as always, his newly grown fuzz of blonde hair bright under the bridge lights and his dented armor spotless, Rex nodded.
Yes, sir. They've adjusted well, and will do you proud.
Weary beyond even groaning aloud, Bail Organa returned from the Senate to the empty solace of his apartment. Voice print and a retinal scan verified his identity. The outer door slid open, and as he stepped across the threshold into the apartment's foyer, the lighting came on. Reduced by a quarter, he said, wincing.
The illumination moderated, and he sighed his relief. He unpinned and removed his dark green cloak and slung it across the back of a chair. Then, as he kicked off his boots and stripped off his socks, he called for a playback of any received messages. Just one, his wife, Breha. Bale felt his heart thud, looking at her beautiful hologram face.
Don't worry, B. Nothing's wrong, she said,
her image flickering, losing its cohesion. Ion storms somewhere between Alderaan and Coruscant. They always played havoc with galactic communications.
I just wanted you to know that I'm thinking of you. I was watching the holonet feed from the Senate. You look tired. Are you getting enough sleep? I'll bet you're not. Go to bed, hotshot. I'll try to catch you tomorrow.
She flickered out entirely. Aching for her, unsettled, he wandered barefoot across the deep pile carpet to brood on the extravagant light show that was Coruscant at night. No, the early morning, a time when sane people were in their beds, asleep. 3 days had passed since the Separatist terror attacks, and the city, it seemed, was itself again, more or less. Of course, there'd been some adjustments. The damaged court buildings were still off-limits, under assessment for reconstruction, with current cases on suspension and new cases backing up until replacement judiciary officials were found and sworn in, as well as temporary premises arranged. Which wasn't proving a simple task. Coruscant was such a crowded city. The same problem faced the various government officials who'd survived the attacks but lost their offices. There was an unseemly scramble for desks and holovids and every other kind of equipment. And of course, extra multi-sector security measures had been put in place, devised largely by himself and Padme. Why was it they were the only two members of the security committee who seemed capable of reaching a decision quickly? The rest of the committee appeared paralyzed. The whole Criffing Senate was paralyzed, as though the Separatist success had infected the entire government with inertia. Most of it, anyway. The senators from the worlds on the front lines of the fighting were energetic enough. They railed against Dooku and his allies, railed against the Jedi for failing to rescue them, and looked to the Supreme Chancellor for an instant, bloodless solution. And when Palpatine explained that wars took time to win, and the Jedi were fighting their hardest, when he did what had to be done, impose emergency levies on those worlds to help finance the blightingly expensive counteroffensive against the Separatists, they immediately railed against him. The rest of the senators, from those worlds as yet unaffected, tried to pretend that none of this was happening, and complained that the new security procedures were cramping their style. I've got a good mind to leave them to their whining and fly home to Breha, Bale thought. But of course he couldn't do that. What would become of the Republic if every senator gave up when the going got tough? Padme wasn't giving up. She railed right back at them, waved her fist in their faces, scolded them for laziness, called them to account. And they listened. How could they ignore her? She was the child queen who'd faced down the Trade Federation and won. She was the senator who'd defied assassins to speak out for peace. She'd fought on Geonosis alongside the Jedi. And she was a close personal friend of Supreme Chancellor Palpatine. So, however reluctantly, they listened to Padme. And, however imperfectly, some things got done. Morose, disconsolate, he turned away from the window and crossed to the wine cabinet. Peace, and a generous helping of fiery Corellian brandy. Then, perhaps, he could start to relax. Glass in hand, brandy warmth lingering, he set the bottle on a side table and sank into his favorite chair. He wanted to call Breha, to lose himself in her soft voice and heal his hurts with her smile. But it was mid-morning on Alderaan, and she'd be in the legislate, taking care of their people. Without her, he could never have remained on Coruscant. The welfare of Alderaan was cradled in her hands. And the welfare of the Republic is cradled in mine, he thought. Well, not only his, although on days like this one it seemed like it. How did Palpatine stand it? How could he bear the desperate hunger of all those planets looking to him for their salvation? A lesser man would have broken long before now, but Palpatine withstood the pressure. In a strange way, he seemed almost to thrive on it, as though being needed gave him the strength to go on. The man was remarkable. I don't know where we'd be without him. He poured himself more brandy. Sipping slowly, he stared again at the unsleeping city. He should eat something, He hadn't eaten for hours, and brandy on an empty stomach was a recipe for disaster. But he was too tired to move. He let his eyes drift closed. He fell gently into sleep. And then, startled awake, heart pounding, as the comlink in his tunic's inner pocket, the comlink not even Breha knew about, erupted into insistent beeping. Chapter 10. The room smelled of brandy. The glass had slipped from his oblivious fingers and spilled its contents onto the carpet. Beyond the apartment window, the sky's darkness had given way to first light, the impudent splendor of Coruscant's brash night fading to its discreet daytime face. With a shaking hand, he retrieved the beeping comlink and acknowledged receipt of the communication. The beeping stopped. His apartment fell silent. So silent, he could hear his hard beating heart. Sweat prickled his skin. His breathing felt ragged. A spike of pain between his eyes woke to stabbing life. He took the comlink into his bedroom and connected it to the small data reader he kept in his bedside odds and ends drawer. It was an old Alderaanian unit, battered and outmoded, not worth a second look. At least, that was how it appeared on the outside. Inside, it had been remade. Upgraded to an unmatched sophistication. A series of apparently random characters came up on the data reader's screen. Decoding them was a manual task. He'd committed the decryption algorithm to memory years ago. It was part of the arrangement. The process of downloading a message from the comlink to the data reader triggered an automatic comm wipe. No record of the incoming message remained. The same protection was built into the data reader. He had precisely 5 minutes to decode the downloaded transmission. After that, it was also wiped. That was part of the arrangement, too. Because this was too important to get wrong, he jotted down the message's random symbols onto old-fashioned flimsyplast with an old-fashioned pen. Probably his contact would be horrified to learn that, but he or she never would, and it couldn't be helped. He wasn't prepared to make a mistake. Besides, flimsy could be burned, his scribbling lost forever to prying eyes. Once the message was decoded, he stared at it. Was this right? Could it be right? Secrecy was his mysterious benefactor's watchword, paranoia their religion. They could be wrong, couldn't they? And surely the Jedi would know of this, surely. Don't try second-guessing them now, Organa thought. Either you trust them or you don't. He activated his house droid. There's brandy spilled in the living room. Clean it up and then I want breakfast.
Yes, sir,
said the droid and withdrew. Next, he placed a call to Padme's apartment.
I'm sorry, sir,
said her officious protocol droid. It actually sounded offended. It even looked offended. How was that possible?
I'm afraid my mistress has not yet arisen. Perhaps you'd care to call back at a more reasonable...
The criffing thing was arguing with him? Perhaps you didn't quite catch my name, he said, letting his temper loose just a little. This is Senator Bail Organa, and my business can't wait. As the protocol droid dithered, a familiar voice spoke in the background.
Threepio, what's going on?
The droid turned.
Oh, Mistress Padme, I am so sorry. I was just trying to explain to Senator Organa that you were...
Bail?
Said Padme, appearing on the view screen, pushing the droid aside.
What is it? What's happened?
She'd had as little sleep as he, probably, but it was impossible to tell. Padme's stamina appeared to be inexhaustible. Sorry to call so early, Senator, but I've got a full day of meetings lined up and I needed to run some of my tactical analyses past you. Can we meet in, say, half an hour? I'll come to you. She didn't answer immediately. Questions burned in her eyes. But she didn't ask them. Amazing woman.
To me? Yes, she said at last. Of course.
She sounded quite relaxed, but he could see the tension in her. He had no doubt she saw it in him, too.
Half an hour.
Relief flooded through him as the vidlink disconnected. He reread the decoded message 3 more times, made certain it was accurately committed to memory, then burned it and washed the ashes down the kitchen sink. After that, he showered, changed, bolted down his breakfast, and departed for Padme's residence. Half an hour didn't leave much time for eating or dressing, but Bail wouldn't have called so early if the matter weren't urgent.
Ignoring fussing and fidgeting 3PO, Padme rushed through her morning toilette, hastily swallowed the scrambled eggs the droid handed her, then stood on her apartment's docking platform and waited for her unexpected visitor.
Something scared him, she thought. Something big.
Which hardly left her feeling sanguine. Bail Organa was a courageous, capable man. If he was unsettled, and he was unsettled, she'd seen the turmoil in his eyes, then it could only mean more trouble for Coruscant, or for somewhere else in the Republic.
As if we don't have trouble enough, she thought.
Still, the call hadn't been about Anakin. Nothing terrible had happened to her husband, and that meant she could face with equanimity any news Bail brought, no matter how dire. There could be no greater disaster than disaster befalling Anakin. She hadn't heard from him, of course, and there'd been nothing, not even a whisper of a suggestion of a rumor, on either the Holonet or from any senatorial staffer about conflict in or near the Bothan system. If there had been, she would have heard it.
They say no news is good news, she thought. I say no news is agony, but surely Obi-Wan would tell me if something had gone wrong.
She thought he would, even though they didn't move in the same circles, even though they were, to all intents and purposes, estranged, while being at the same time inextricably tied. Forgive me, Bail said upon his arrival. I didn't know where else to turn. As always, he presented an immaculate face to the world, perfectly groomed, conservatively attired, elegance personified. But they'd worked together for a good while now, and she could see beneath his polished surface. She hadn't been mistaken about him during their brief VidCom conversation. He was alarmed. She tried to reassure him with a smile.
There's nothing to forgive, Bail, and whatever's wrong, we'll fix it.
Leaving his airspeeder safely docked, they went into her living room where C-3PO served tea and then made himself scarce. Covertly considering her colleague, Padme activated the apartment's privacy seals, which automatically activated her listening devices and denied access to all visitors and incoming communications, save for Anakin, Palpatine, and a Senate alert.
There you are, she said, choosing her favorite chair. We won't be disturbed. Please, Bail, tell me what's happened.
Bail hesitated, then sat on the sofa. But he was clearly ill at ease, perching on its very edge, fingers close to gripping his knees. I'm in possession of some information, from a source that's reliable but, let's say, unconventional. It has serious implications for the Republic and for the Jedi. I've been asked to tell them what I've been told. She reached for her mug of tea and sipped, frowning.
If it's Jedi business, why come to me? You should be speaking with them.
Ignoring his own tea, he shook his head. I don't know them, Padme, at least not well, not the way you do. And they don't know me. There's no reason to think they'd believe what I have to say, especially given the circumstances.
Your unconventional source?
Exactly. As though sitting was intolerable, he pushed to his feet and began to roam between the sofa and the window. Of course, it's possible the Jedi already know about this, but if they don't, if they are in danger and don't realize it... He pressed a fist against his lips, as though fighting to hold back an intemperate outburst. It was so unlike him, such an outward expression of an inner agitation. Padme, he said, and swung about to face her. Have you ever heard of the Sith?
Sith.
The name alone was enough to raise her hackles. Twice their machinations had nearly killed her, and because of the hurt inflicted upon Anakin and the murder of Qui-Gon Jinn and the sufferings of Naboo under Trade Federation occupation, the Sith had earned her undying hatred. But she couldn't tell Bail that. As Naboo's child queen, she'd promised Master Yoda she would never reveal what she'd learned of them. She'd renewed that promise to Obi-Wan on the desperate flight from Geonosis to Coruscant when she'd overheard things not meant for her ears.
Sith lightning, Dooku, a dreadful betrayal, she thought.
So with only the smallest twinge of conscience, she looked at Bail Organa and lied.
Sith? No, why? Who? What are they?
I don't know, he said frustrated. Until this morning I'd never heard of them either. She sipped more tea.
Well, what did your contact tell you?
That they're plotting an attack that will devastate the Jedi. She felt herself go cold, then hot.
You're sure of this?
Bail dropped to the sofa again.
I didn't misunderstand the message, if that's what you mean. Padme, please. I can't do this without you. You're the Jedi's friend, a trusted ally. If you speak up for me, if you vouch for me to them, then...
they'll trust you?
Though she was deeply disturbed by his news, she had to smile.
The friend of my friend is my friend?
His own smile was brief. Something like that.
The Sith.
Anakin had told her what little he knew of them. He never admitted it, but she knew they scared him. Knew he still mourned the loss of Qui-Gon Jinn. And she knew that the scars from his loss to Dooku were more than physical. But he didn't only fear them for himself. He feared for the Republic, for the galaxy. Should their darkness win, should they prove victorious in their clandestine war against the Jedi.
Sworn to secrecy or not, she thought, he'd want me to help.
She nodded at Bail.
All right.
As Bail watched, chewing the edge of his thumb, she retrieved her private comlink from a nearby display shelf and opened a channel to the Jedi Temple.
This is Senator Amidala. I need to speak with Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Bail was right about one thing. The Jedi counted her an ally. There was no objection to her request.
Senator Amidala? This is Obi-Wan Kenobi. How can I assist you?
He sounded surprised, cagily cautious.
Master Kenobi, I wonder if you could spare me a little of your time. Something's come up, and I'd appreciate your advice.
Of course,
he replied after a moment.
Did you wish to come to the temple, or...
If you could come to me at home, I'd be most grateful,
she said quickly.
Now would be convenient, if that's convenient for you.
Certainly, Senator. I'll be with you shortly.
Thank you, Master Kenobi,
she said, disconnecting the link. Bail was staring at her, almost bemused. Just like that, you snap your fingers and the Jedi jump? She raised an eyebrow at him.
Isn't that why you came to me, Bail?
Well, yes, I suppose, but I didn't think... I wasn't aware. He shook his head. I'm impressed.
Don't be, she told him. I might be able to get Obi-Wan to come here, but I can't make him believe you or your story.
Do you believe me? He asked, considering her closely.
I believe you think there's a genuine threat.
She shrugged.
That's more than enough for me. Will you be all right for a moment? I want to go outside and wait for Obi-Wan.
Of course.
Good.
She smiled.
I suggest you take a moment to order your thoughts before he gets here. Marshal your arguments. It's true you have an excellent reputation, but I have it on good authority that this particular Jedi's not overly fond of politicians.
Yet he makes an exception for you.
Sometimes, she replied,
and left Bail to think about that while she waited outside for Anakin's former master. He came in an unremarkable temple airspeeder, swinging the vehicle to a halt beside Bail's sleek, expensive model, with a casual expertise that echoed Anakin's, and with enough speed to betray impatience or anxiety. She hurried to meet him as he leapt to the veranda.
What is it?
He demanded. Have you heard from Anakin?
From Anakin? She thought.
She stared at him.
No. Why would I have heard from Anakin? He and I... You made it quite clear. I don't even know where Anakin is, Obi-Wan.
A muddle of emotions touched his face. Chagrin, relief, annoyance, uncertainty. Then his familiar self-control returned.
I'm sorry. A misunderstanding, Senator.
I thought that you sounded concerned over the comlink, and I... He looked down at her hand on his arm.
You're worried for him,
she said, leaving her hand where it was.
Is he in trouble?
Faint color touched Obi-Wan's pale face.
Padme, I can't. It's not appropriate that I...
He shook his head. I can't.
Can't what?
She said softly and withdrew her hand.
Admit you're worried? Of course you can. You can to me. I'm not Yoda. I'm not Mace Windu. I don't think caring for someone is a crime. Is Anakin in trouble?
She didn't think he'd answer. Thought instead he'd put her in her senatorial place with a few chilly, well-chosen words. He was good at that. But he didn't. Instead, she saw his Jedi mask slip again, just for a heartbeat. Saw that beneath his stoic exterior, he was as conflicted as Anakin so often was. In his eyes, the need to talk. To share. To know he wasn't alone in being afraid.
He's on a mission, he said at last. I can't tell you where or what it is, but it's not proving as straightforward as we'd hoped.
We'd thought to have heard from him by this morning, but we haven't. She felt her heart thud.
Is he hurt?
No, he said quickly, vehemently. Just challenged. This mission is important. A great deal depends on its success. I should be there with him. He shouldn't be facing it alone, but my injuries... I was prevented. It was so unlike Obi-Wan to be incoherent. It was his articulate self-possession in the face of danger that so impressed her. Even though she hadn't entirely forgiven him for his interference in her life, she felt a surge of pity.
For all our differences, she thought, we have this one thing in common. We both love Anakin, and we always will. It's not your fault, Obi-Wan. You didn't abandon him. You nearly died. Although, she looked him up and down. It seems you've made a remarkable recovery.
He shrugged that away. The temple healers are very skilled.
Padme, why am I here?
She glanced over her shoulder.
I have a visitor, Obi-Wan, Senator Bail Organa of Alderaan. He claims to have received word of a planned attack against you. By the Sith.
Between breaths, he changed. She felt it. Felt the warmth of his humanity flash freeze to ice. Felt the air surrounding them crackle with power. In the hangar on Naboo, facing the red and black assassin. In her apartment bedroom, having narrowly escaped being murdered by the bounty hunter Zam Wessel. In the arena on Geonosis, staring at monstrous mechanical death. She'd felt it then, too.
Jedi.
She stepped back, her skin prickling.
I've told him nothing. Whatever he knows, his contact told him.
What contact? Obi-Wan asked.
What precisely does Senator Organa know? You'll have to ask him that, she said. He came to me because the Jedi don't know him very well. Because he trusts me, and he knows you trust me too.
Outwardly, Obi-Wan seemed to do nothing, but his terrible aspect eased. Her skin stopped prickling. And do you trust him? He asked mildly enough.
I do. He's a good man, Obi-Wan. He loves the Republic. He works as hard as any Jedi to see it kept safe.
There was the faintest derision in Obi-Wan's clear blue eyes. He's a politician, Padme. She raised an eyebrow.
So am I. Isn't that your biggest problem with me?
My biggest problem? He thought.
No.
The answer flashed across his face, as easy to read as any hollow billboard. But he didn't say the words out loud. You're a lot more than a mere politician, he said instead, and now his eyes warmed with a faint, reluctant smile. As we both know.
A compliment, she said, pretending shock. You should warn me next time, Obi-Wan. Give me a chance to sit down first.
He didn't rise to the bait. It's odd, but now that I think of it, Padme, you've encountered the Sith as often as I have, he murmured, frowning. Almost as if they're as interested in you as they are in us.
She shivered. The Sith interested in her? Oh, please let him be wrong, she thought, then said. Don't say things like that.
This threat, he continued, his eyes hinting at an apology. Do you find it plausible?
I don't know the details, she said, wrenching her thoughts from that dark place. I don't know Bail's contact, but for what little it's worth, Obi-Wan, I do know him well enough to promise he doesn't scare easily. And he's not a gullible fool, either, to fall for any old story.
I see, said Obi-Wan, and sighed.
Very well then, Padme.
Let us hear what Senator Organa has to say. They call themselves the Friends of the Republic, said the senator from Alderaan. They first contacted me a little over 4 years ago. At the time, the Alderaan government was in negotiations with Chandra-La for a joint mining venture on Eridus. My wife's family has connections to the corporate sector, and some of those connections were involved with the project. The information provided by this group helped avert a diplomatic and humanitarian disaster that would have engulfed not only Alderaan and Chandra-La, but several other key Republic systems as well. Obi-Wan considered him, frowning. And they did so because they are friends of the Republic. A flicker in Organa's eyes showed he heard the skepticism, but he didn't respond to it. And because they would have been directly impacted by the resulting scandal if the mining venture had been allowed to continue as planned. Ah, of course. In other words, they were motivated by personal gain.
I don't deny enlightened self-interest was a factor, Organa said mildly enough, but it's also true that many lives and livelihoods were saved by their intervention. He shrugged. After all, self-preservation isn't a crime. Perhaps not, but as a motive, it did tarnish the altruistic halo. And they assumed you would also act out of enlightened self-interest. They gambled that even if I wasn't motivated by doing the right thing, I'd use all my political power to avoid a scandal that would damage my house. But I can assure you, Master Kenobi, that if doing the right thing had meant exposing my family and connections to censure, then I would not have hesitated. There were many lives on the line. An interesting admission. Is this man a typical politician, or isn't he? Obi-Wan thought. The Jedi Council always thought of him as a friend, but these are proving to be deceptive times. Trust is a more expensive commodity now. Then Obi-Wan said, I don't recall hearing anything of this narrowly averted mining disaster. Organa's brief smile was grim. It was handled at the highest diplomatic levels with the utmost discretion. If the details had leaked, we'd still be mopping up the political fallout today. Really? Obi-Wan thought. Well, that certainly confirmed what the Jedi knew of Organa's credentials and influence. So, Senator, you handled a difficult situation neatly. Congratulations. But forgive me if I point out that one Minok does not an infestation make. Organa leaned forward, fingers fisted so tight his knuckles whitened. Master Kenobi, please, give me some credit. These friends of the Republic proved themselves 5 more times after our initial encounter. They were matters of internal Alderaan security. I don't propose to divulge the details, but I can assure you they have done me and my house great service. By extension, they have served the Republic. And for all I know, I'm not the only one they've helped. I'm sorry I can't be more specific about them, but what I've told you is the truth. Are you prepared to take my word on that?
Of course he is, Bail, said Padme, breaking her silence at last.
Her pleasant tone was deceptive. Beneath its sweetness, a sharp blade lurked.
Obi-Wan knows the Jedi have no better friend than you. I'm sure he hasn't forgotten how you defended the Order in the Senate against the Quarren's unjust accusations of child theft.
No, he had not, but that incident had no bearing on the current situation. He shot her a quelling look. Do not push me, Padme. Then he nodded at Organa. Your support of the Jedi is well known in the Order, Senator, he said at his most reserved. Please do not misinterpret my concerns as suspicion. I don't, said Organa. It's in all our best interest to be cautious these days, Master Kenobi.
Obi-Wan, said Padme. Her tone was softer, more cajoling than commanding. These are dark times, it's true. But some friends remain friends until the end. I believe Bail is one of them.
So she understood, did she, the wariness that now pervaded the Jedi Council? Interesting. He turned again to Organa. Senator, I accept your assertion that these people, whoever they are, have proven themselves to be friends of Alderaan, and their information in that regard is reliable. But what makes you believe they're reliable beyond that? Organa flicked an apologetic glance at Padme. Then he braced his shoulders. You're not going to like this, either of you. Obi-Wan swallowed a sigh. Probably not, no. I already don't like it, and I hardly know anything yet. Obi-Wan thought, then said, Let me be the judge of that, Senator. Slowly, choosing his words with care, Organa detailed the other information that had been passed to him by his mysterious contact, information concerning certain wartime engagements that was rigorously restricted, such as the fact that the clone army had been ordered by an unknown Jedi, and that Anakin Skywalker had nearly been killed by the fallen Jedi Count Dooku. That a traitor in the Bakuran government was responsible for Grievous's annihilation of the entire ruling Synod, and that during the Christophsis mission, Dooku's pet assassin, Asajj Ventress, had only just failed to murder 2 Jedi Knights. Padme was staring at Organa.
But Bail, why did you never mention this? Surely the Security Committee should know, Chancellor Palpatine should know, that there's been a breach of...
I couldn't tell you, or anyone. I'm sorry, Padme, said Organa. He sounded defensive. I gave these people my word years ago that I would never reveal their existence.
How could I repay all the good they've done with treachery? They told me these things as a show of good faith, as a way to demonstrate that their wartime intelligence network is extensive and accurate, that if they give me information about the Separatists, I can trust it's correct.
Yes, well, that sounds good in theory, she retorted. But Bale?
Have they told anyone else? Have they undermined the war effort by making any of the information public? Organa demanded.
No, they haven't. Instead, they're trying to help me, help us, again. And we have to let them, because if they're right, and they've never been wrong,
the stakes are higher than ever before. And that was true if the Sith were involved. Obi-Wan frowned at his interlaced fingers, inwardly shaken. Then he looked up.
How does your arrangement with these people work, Senator? Do you meet with them?
Organa shook his head. No. I've never seen or even spoken with them. Their communications are text-based and encrypted. Coded messages sent in short burst over a secure link they gave me at the time of the Eridus situation. And I can't contact them. They don't work for me, Master Kenobi. If they learn something they think I should know, they tell me. That's it.
Extraordinary, Obi-Wan thought, then said.
You are taking an amazing leap of faith, Senator. And now you're asking me to leap with you.
Don't you think I know that? Organa demanded.
But given what they know, what they've managed to learn, is it any wonder they guard their identity so jealously? Is it fair to blame them for protecting themselves the only way they know how?
No, it wasn't fair, and there was nothing but truth in Bail Organa's passionate defense of them.
Alderaan Senator believed every word he said. But was that enough? Profoundly unsettled, Obi-Wan let his gaze shift from Organa to Padme.
She trusts him, he thought, just as she trusted Qui-Gon and Boss Nass. As she trusted herself when she felt Dooku was behind the Separatists, even when Mace and Ki-Adi-Mundi spoke against her. She wasn't wrong then. I just have to trust she's not wrong now.
He looked back at Organa. And now these unidentified, secretive friends of yours have warned you about an attack on the Jedi by the Sith.
Yes, Senator, he added, as Organa stared at Padme.
Your colleague told me that much. She wanted to be certain you had my full attention.
You do.
Organa stood and paced to the apartment's panoramic window. Rigid with tension, he stared out across the city, toward the Jedi Temple. Then he turned, his face pinched.
So you're telling me they exist, these Sith? They're real?
Obi-Wan hesitated and thought. If I tell him the truth, if I reveal to this man one of our greatest secrets, and he proves false. The problem was, Organa already knew the truth. He'd learned the secret. Well, part of the secret. And a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, Obi-Wan thought. If I try to put him off, dismiss what he's been told as rumor or hearsay, will he believe me? I don't think so. I think he'll try to discover more on his own. And that would be far more dangerous for all of us. I have no choice but to tell him the truth.
He could only hope that Yoda and the Council agreed with him.
Chapter 11.
Yes, Senator, he said quietly. The Sith are real.
Organa stared, almost as though he'd been expecting a denial. Then he nodded.
All right. So at least we know my contact's not been misled about that.
How many are there? Who are their leaders? I presume they have names.
Obi-Wan didn't dare look at Padme.
We don't know their leaders' true identities. We know only that they exist.
And do they present a danger to the Jedi?
It was too late to turn back now.
They threaten not only the Jedi, but the entire galaxy. Every life now breathing, sentient and non-sentient, and every life that is yet to be born.
It was Organa's turn to be shaken.
Are you serious?
Yes. I am not at liberty to divulge more details, Obi-Wan said, briefly enjoying the irony. I simply ask you to accept my word on that matter. The irony wasn't lost on Organa either, but his thin smile faded quickly.
If the Sith are such a threat, Master Kenobi, why have I never heard of them? I'm head of the Republic Security Committee. I should have heard of them.
Now there was an edge of temper in his mellow voice,
a hint of anger that masked a deeper fear. Accepting it, Obi-Wan maintained his own composure. The Sith live in the shadows of the dark side, Senator. The Jedi believe that they were long dead, vanquished 1,000 years ago. Really? Organa snorted, derisive. Then it would appear the Jedi were mistaken.
Bail, said Padme. That's not fair.
Not fair? Said Organa. His dark eyes were glinting. I'll tell you what's not fair, Padme. It's not fair the Jedi know of a threat that make the Separatists look like playground bullies, and they haven't seen fit to inform the Senate. It's high-handed, autocratic decisions like this that fuel mistrust and resentment of them in the Outer Rim, and sometimes even closer to home. It's not good enough. We must work together as equals, or we'll fail. Padme slid out of her chair and took a step toward him.
Fail, please. Calm down and...
Calm down? He echoed. No, I'm angry, Padme. Why aren't you? What else is going on that they haven't told us? What do they know that you and I should know as representatives of the people and members of the Security Committee? That Palpatine should know as the Republic's duly elected Supreme Chancellor? Don't you see what's happening here? As hard as it may be to believe, the Jedi have placed themselves above the rule of law.
No, Bail, they haven't, Padme said hotly. They're dying to uphold the rule of law.
Well, at least they're dying with their eyes open, snapped Organa, unappeased. How many innocents are going to die, are dying in ignorance because the Jedi aren't being open and honest? Obi-Wan pushed to his feet.
I've been a fool, he thought. Supportive or not, this man is a politician, an outsider, and he will never understand. I should heed my own advice. It's never wise to trust them.
Senators, this matter cannot be resolved here and now. Therefore, I shall return to the temple and refer it to the Jedi Council. Until such time as a decision is made on how best to proceed, I'd ask that you both...
No, wait, said Padme, and caught hold of his arm. Master Kenobi, please wait. She turned. Bail, I'm sorry. I do know about the Sith. I've known for 10 years.
Obi-Wan stared at her, taken by surprise. Though really, after Geonosis, he thought, I shouldn't be. But she had no business telling Organa anything. She'd given the Jedi her solemn word that her knowledge of the Sith would remain secret.
Padme, it's all right, Obi-Wan, she said quickly. I promise.
Which was easy for her to say, but from the look on Organa's face, things were far from all right.
10 years?
The Senator said blankly.
How do you... They were behind the invasion of Naboo, she said. And they're behind this war with the Separatists. Bail, you must listen to Obi-Wan. He knows what he's talking about. He's the only Jedi in 1,000 years to have faced a Sith in mortal combat and lived.
You know? Said Organa, still sounding dazed.
And you stayed silent?
Padme.
Trust me, Bail, she said, her voice unsteady. There are worse things than silence.
You mean like not bothering to mention an enemy like the Sith? Her chin came up.
I see. So you're turning hypocrite on me, is that it?
I'm not a hypocrite.
Oh? So you're not withholding intelligence from the Security Committee? From the Senate? From Palpatine? I imagine what you just said you were told about Bakura and Christophsis and the clones?
Organa's face tightened. That's different.
Yes, yes, that's what all the hypocrites say, she retorted, close to snarling. There's always a reason why the rules don't apply to them.
There was molten silence as they stared at each other, breathing hard, like two lightsaber opponents fought to a momentary standstill. Obi-Wan sighed.
This really was a mistake, he thought. Yoda is going to peel my hide.
Senators! Padme stopped him with an imperious, upraised hand.
Bail, she said more calmly. You have your reasons for not telling anyone about your friends of the Republic. As far as you're concerned, they're good reasons. And you expect me to respect them. So why can't you respect the Jedi's decision, my decision, not to reveal the existence of the Sith?
Scowling, Organa folded his arms. You think I don't see the parallels here?
I do. But Padme, there's the very real question of degree. We are talking about the safety of our entire galaxy, not just...
I know that, she said, and moved closer to rest a hesitant hand on his forearm.
He was so tall, so imposing, and she was so small in contrast.
But only physically.
There was nothing small about her spirit.
It's because the galaxy stands at risk from the Sith that I agree with how the Jedi are handling this. Bail, I've seen what they can do. Believe me, only the Jedi can handle this. Are you going to tell me you know how to defeat an enemy who lives and breathes the dark side of the Force? That Palpatine does? Of course not, but at the very least, Palpatine should be told that...
Was told, Bail, said Padme reluctantly. When he came to Naboo for Qui-Gon's funeral and the formal reconciliation and treaty between our people and the Gungans, and he agreed that the Sith should be kept a secret.
Organa's eyes widened in shock, but he recovered himself quickly. That was then, but things are different now, Padme. And if we're at war with these Sith, then...
Then how is our cause helped by spreading more fear, more confusion, when so far very little is known about them?
Padme argued.
When we're already struggling against the Separatists. Or are you saying this news wouldn't provoke panic?
Organa hesitated, then shook his head.
No, I'm not saying that. Well then?
He looked down at her, clearly torn between resentment and contrition. How is it you contrive to put me in the wrong when I know I have a legitimate grievance? She smiled at him, fleeting mischief banishing the last of her temper.
It's a gift.
Ha! He said, his anger evaporating. One woman's gift is another man's curse. He shrugged. What can I say, Padme? I'm afraid.
If it helps,
she said, her eyes full of sympathy,
you're not the only one.
Obi-Wan looked at her. She's afraid for Anakin, he thought, because, like a fool, I allowed my concerns for him to loosen my tongue. I should peel my own hide. He cleared his throat. The senators... Organa turned. Master Kenobi, his expression shifted from warm apology to a cooler, more distant regret. Forgive me, I was intemperate, and I should heed my own advice. Only by working together, trusting each other, can we hope to win this war. The Jedi may have their own way of doing things, often difficult to fathom by outsiders. But nobody is making a greater sacrifice for the Republic. I know that. Obi-Wan nodded, acknowledging the sentiment. But he's still a politician. Trust extends only so far, he thought, then said, Thank you, Senator. Your support is appreciated. Organa wasn't a stupid man. He knew unenthusiastic when he heard it, and so did Padme.
Look, she said firmly, I think we can agree, can't we, that our dedication to the preservation of the Republic is a given. In which case, let's finish what we've started here, because surely the only thing that matters is preventing the Sith from hurting the Jedi and, through them, the Republic.
Despite his concerns, Obi-Wan had to smile. She was indeed an impressive young woman, wise beyond her years, her diplomatic skills honed to a lethal edge.
Yes,
he said quietly, it is the only thing that matters. She nodded, pleased.
Then I suggest we sit down again and continue this discussion bearing that in mind.
They resumed their seats, a trifle awkward, somewhat off balance. The aftermath of anger was always uncomfortable. Senator Organa, said Obi-Wan, can you tell me precisely what your contact told you? Organa's fingers drummed the arm of his chair. It wasn't much, I'm afraid. A warning of a Sith plot to destroy the Jedi. Mention of a planet called Zagula. And an express request that I inform you of the danger, which tells me the situation's desperate. They would never chance discovery if it weren't.
Zagula, said Padme, frowning. I've never heard of it. Have you, Obi-Wan?
No, he replied, but then he'd never heard of Kamino either. It was a large galaxy, after all. With luck, there'd be a reference to it in the temple archives.
Unless, like Kamino, someone's deleted the files, he thought.
His gut tightened, the merest thought of more archive meddling enough to make him ill.
Stop it. You've enough trouble in front of you without borrowing more, he thought.
If the Sith managed to hide their existence from the Jedi for 1,000 years, said Organa, that implies they are masters of deception. Is it within their power to hide a whole planet? I'm afraid I'm not at liberty to discuss that, Obi-Wan said, standing. Senator, as I said, this matter must be referred to Master Yoda and the Council. I will be as discreet as I can.
I know you're anxious to protect your source's anonymity.
Very anxious, Master Kenobi.
In the meantime, if you hear from your contact again, I'd ask that you bring me any new information without delay.
Organa's lips tightened, but he nodded.
All right.
Thank you. And, Senator, should Master Yoda wish to speak with you about this, would you be willing to do so?
Yes, Organa said slowly, but you must understand, Master Kenobi, I won't compromise my relationship with these people by telling him any more about them than I've told you. What they tell you is up to them, but I gave them my word.
Wonderful. First Dex, now Bail Organa, Obi-Wan thought. It seems I'm making a habit of collecting uncooperative informants.
Of course, Senator. We would never ask you to violate a confidence.
That's good to know, Organa said dryly. You'll keep me informed, Master Kenobi, of what you learn.
If I can, Obi-Wan replied. Though I can make you no promises, I do, however, thank you, Senator Organa. I know telling me this can't have been easy.
Organa shrugged. I was honoring my contact's wishes, that's all.
Of course.
Obi-Wan hesitated and thought.
He won't like this, but I'm bound to say it.
Senator, you'd do well to forget everything you've heard today. Let the Jedi handle this, and never speak of the Sith to anyone, ever. It's quite impossible to overestimate the danger they pose.
Organa half-smiled. It's good of you to think of me, Master Kenobi, but I'm quite adept at protecting myself.
Obi-Wan let the bleakness touch his face, unrestrained. So was my former master, Qui-Gon Jinn. He was a great man, a great Jedi. Yet the Sith still murdered him.
I see, said Organa after a moment. I wasn't aware of that.
Few people are. Your discretion would be appreciated.
Organa nodded.
Of course.
If you'll excuse me for a moment, Bail, I'll walk Master Kenobi to his speeder, said Padme. I won't be long.
Outside, Coruscant's air traffic had increased to its mid-morning height. With it, the sky's ambient noise had increased, and the gentle buffeting of the slipstreams. Halting by his plain, serviceable vehicle, his cloak tugging in the breeze, Obi-Wan turned to Padme.
I didn't realize you and the senator from Alderaan were such good friends.
A hint of censure touched her eyes.
We've been working together on Senate committees for almost 2 years now. We share the same goals for the Republic and have the same impatience with indecision and inefficiency. I'm friends with his wife, Briha, too.
Which neatly put him in his place. But he was sorry for it. He'd rather see Padme conducting an ill-advised romantic affair than pining after an unattainable Anakin. And he had no doubt that she was pining. She possessed remarkable self-control, but he was a Jedi, and he did know her quite well.
Of course, he said. Padme, I do wish you hadn't told him of the Sith.
You can trust him.
I hope so, he thought. Then said, most likely his information will prove to be a false alarm, but I am pleased you felt able to call on me, he said, letting the matter go for now. I know we haven't always seen eye to eye, but I do hold you in the highest regard, Padme. I hope you know that. I hope nothing happens to make you feel you can't call on me, if ever you find yourself in trouble.
Instead of answering, she stared across the cityscape, letting her gaze rest upon the distant temple, so beautiful in the sun.
Yes, she said at last. I hope so, too.
By the way, he added, climbing into his airspeeder, I never thanked you for your assistance in the recent Hutt kidnapping matter. Your intervention proved crucial.
I didn't do it for you. I did it for Anakin.
She didn't say the words aloud, but he heard them anyway. Saw the stark sentiment in her face.
It doesn't matter who you did it for, Padme, he said softly. You did it, and you made a difference. Every day you make a difference. Anakin is the man he is now because he knew you. For that alone, I shall always be grateful.
She blinked a little too rapidly.
Thank you.
He shouldn't ask. He should leave. But there was something in her eyes, and he felt responsible.
You still miss him, don't you? Oh, Obi-Wan, she sighed. What do you want me to tell you?
The truth. Her eyes chilled.
Then yes, I still miss him.
You did the right thing, Padme, he said gently, regretting the question.
And in time, the pain will fade. In time, you'll forget.
Like he forgot his mother?
If she'd stabbed him with a Talasian stiletto, she couldn't have pierced him more sharply, more deeply.
Padme.
She looked away.
I'm sorry, that wasn't fair.
It's nothing. I know I hurt you asking you to walk away.
I'm sorry.
Looking back again, she managed a smile.
Well,